Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by Media Clip, Photo Finale, and Advertech Printing. Hello again, and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by the legendary Scott Kelby of Kelby One, one of the industry's largest training platforms for the photography world. Hey, Scott, how are you today?
I am awesome, Gary. Thanks for having me.
So, Scott, in the age of COVID, how has that impacted the training world?
It's impacted it in a really massive way. So, I think of our company as like an online based, you know, we do online training. We've got like 800 classes and that's our main business. But an important part of our business are live events. So each year we hold the Photoshop World Conference. It's usually in Las Vegas, which is a big conference, and it brings in photographers. It's a Photoshop conference with a ton of Lightroom training and a ton of photography training. So it started as Photoshop World, but as photographers kind of moved into that space, it became more of a photography world. But there's a lot of, you know, software and post-processing that we teach. But yeah, that conference went away. We've replaced it with online conferences. We've done five or six so far, and they're two-day events. But it's just not the same. You know, it's like, I think just as people, we need to get together. We need to gather in groups. And there are friends that I only see at Photoshop World. I look forward to it so much each year. It's like a family gathering. And there's been people that have been coming for 15, 20 years that come to every single Photoshop World every single year. Right. And it's kind of like a homecoming. And that's been kind of rough. I do a seminar tour that goes to like 22 cities. And I think I went to two last year before I had to stop. So I miss all that a lot. It is, we've had to shift our business. Sure. And so it's been okay, but it's just replacing that human contact is just so hard. It's just, you know, I mean, you can do it virtually and it's not bad, but it's just not that level of awesome. There's no hugging. There's no hanging out at the bar. There's right, just all exactly. these things that we do and fun that we have. And it's so
or even just incidental encounters. Like you see someone and you see their badge and you realize, hey, this is someone I need to meet, right? You don't do that online.
Yeah. All that stuff, you know, just I always tell people, and I said this even, you know, before the pandemic and stuff, is that so much of what we do is real connections are made in person. You can email people, you can text, you can do voice stuff, you can do video, but real connection happens in person. And I think that is such a powerful thing. And I've said that forever, because there's people you'll meet and you talk to and you've worked with them for 2 years. You have one dinner with them and everything changes.
Right.
So it's that personal connection. I miss it. It has definitely impacted our whole industry. Gosh, I've got so many friends where they tell me their stories of, you know, their business has been devastated. You know, they're sports photographers.
Right.
And, you know, they're allowing a quarter of the number of photographers that used to be there. And, you know, the access is so limited. And you know, I've got wedding photographers that aren't doing weddings.
Right.
You know, it's just, I've got portrait photographers that go, I can't get anybody to come in my studio. You know, it's just, I can't name a genre of photography that hasn't been impacted by it. Workshops, the workshop business. I had a workshop planned in Prague for this past year. Then I was going to do Tuscany and I had to send an email again to my Prague group. Well, we're not going to go in April. it's disappointing. It's disheartening, but it's, you know, it's kind of where we're at. I'm just, you know, I'm hopeful for the future, but has it impacted every facet of our industry, including production and manufacturing and everything.
Oh yeah. Because I mean, think about how many people plan a big trip and they buy that DSLR, that mirrorless camera, and they buy the bag and they buy the lens and, you know, they make a big, well, all that's gone. Right. I mean, we all know what's happened to camera sales in the last year. And I think, you know, the inhibition of travel has impacted that tremendously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's That's what you use as an excuse to buy new gear. That was our excuse. Well, I'm going to Namibia. I can't go with the crap camera I've got now. I need something really, you know, that was what we used as a reason why we had to get that new camera back.
So I'm just curious, how has COVID changed the format of an online event? I mean, because it's different than a workshop. And the reason why I asked that is because I've seen different organizations try and take their live event and kind of turn it into a virtual event with like a trade show booth or a floor and breakout sessions and things. And I'm really not sure if that's been successful. And you've been doing both. So when you do your virtual Photoshop world, is that a similar format to the live event, or do you do it similar to your online events, or is it a hybrid, or how is that?
So it's kind of a hybrid. I will say this, it has worked phenomenally well. Mm-hmm. From our last one we did, which we just finished one, a travel photography conference, by the way, 99.6% of the respondents, we had over 1,000 people, said that they would absolutely attend another one of our online events.
Right. Okay.
So we run two simultaneous tracks. We have live presentations, live Q&As. We have a wrap up that we will get all the instructors together and do a Q&A. But I will be honest with you, a lot of the people that are coming to our events are people that have been to our live events.
Right.
So it's kind of like they're reconnecting online. The class, you know, presentations are great. We've got studios and we've got, you know, facilities and, you know, we've got a great team. So the quality is great. They get it archived for a year.
Right.
So if they're not able to attend every session or they're not able to be there the day that it broadcasts live, they can watch it for up to a year. Mm-hmm. So it has its advantage and disadvantages. But, you know, we've done six of them so far. The numbers have been tremendous. And mm-hmm. And the feedback has been so great. It's a lot better than I was expecting. The only people that don't do that well is there is no trade show.
Right.
Exactly. So at night we do a vendor area and they get a half an hour to basically just say, hey, if you want to stop by, I'll be showing my product. And it's for some people it has worked quite well. And for others, it just hasn't. It just depends on what your product is and how it translates and how you are as a presenter. Right. So this is now you're talking to someone who's usually standing at a trade show booth, is looking at a camera from their house, from their living room. So right. I would say it's that part of it has been a mixed bag, but the actual teaching, I mean, we're an online company. We release a class every week. So right. We're just releasing a whole bunch of classes real quick, but the quality and the stream and the audio and the video and the instruction, I mean, we've got the best instructors. So it has worked out better than I expected as far as the instruction goes and the happiness of the attendee. And it's the trade show part of it kind of stinks.
So what has been the uptick, I'm just curious, to the archive material? Are people going back and revisiting the sessions they may have missed?
Oh, yeah. I hear from people all the time that'll say, hey, I was just watching a class, and it's from a conference we did 8 months ago.
Okay.
So I still get questions and comments and things from classes that were, yeah, people go back and they watch. They got the time. they've got the time on their hands. So, yeah, they've got, you know, 20 classes basically is what it, you know, where it's two tracks, 2 days. So they have 20 classes plus bonus sessions and a pre-conference workshop. And, yeah, it's all archived for an entire year. So they can just go, you know, watch it. I'm so surprised it has worked out as well as it has. Because I, to be honest with you, Gary, I had very little hope when we first started doing it.
Right.
I was like, we do this stuff live and now we're going to take it online. And I knew that we had the technology because that's what we do, but right. I didn't know how. And so we decided to do them live. Our first conference was 100% live. Every class, we had an instructor in Paris. Mm-hmm. We had an instructor in Canada. We had an instructor in the Netherlands, and we're all broadcasting live. And it worked out astonishingly well, much better than I was expecting. So it's a mixed bag, but mostly good.
I mean, obviously you already had a foot in the online world anyway, so you'd have to build it from the ground up. You know, unfortunately, there's been other conferences in the industry who weren't as prepared. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, because I think once COVID passes, hopefully soon this year, perhaps, and people can start going back to things, it'll be interesting to see how much the online portion is retained. Right. Because you know, you're building an audience based on people who have already come to your events, and you hopefully you've picked up some new people.
Right.
So will the new people who've never been to an in-person event, will they go to a future in-person event? You don't know. No one knows.
I don't know. We don't know.
It'll be interesting because one thing I've discovered from people who are talking about the changes COVID has wrought on the industry is, you know, there's really no going back to a pre-COVID world.
Right.
You know, the future is going to be definitely impacted by COVID and how it's affected their business, whether it's, you know, doing online things or whatever, but we still need the in-person stuff. We've got to have the in-person activity.
We've got to. Yeah. It's how we're wired. I am worried about the zombies. Mm-hmm. I think that's the next wave coming is zombies. But in the meantime, I'm just being
I was thinking,
you had a nervous look there.
Well, I'm thinking, is this like an industry term for someone who logs on but doesn't learn anything, or is this an actual flesh-eating zombie?
Yeah, I was thinking flesh-eating zombie, but just totally kidding. You know who's nailing this though, Gary? If I don't know if you saw the last iPhone event from Apple.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. Dude, they are nailing it. Like, you watch their event, and you're like, this is better than being there. I mean, the amount of money they put into it can only be put into it by Apple.
Correct.
It was like watching a motion picture of a keynote. It was amazing. Right. But, I think people are going to school on that. I think you'll see some great stuff. But I do think, the future is going to be virtual and in person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting year. So yeah. I'm optimistic, and I do see some things already getting better.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, you know, we're kind of learning to live with it, right? We're learning, how do I navigate the space? And like when I do training I had to have a live model in the studio last week. And so we're all wearing masks. We're all 10 feet, 15 feet apart.
Right.
And then at some point I'm on camera, I have to take off my mask. Well, I'm using a 70 to 200 lens. I'm standing 15 feet away from the subject. Right. You know, you're learning, how do I navigate this and keep everybody safe? And you're just learning how. It's just kind of the way it is.
That was a nice segue earlier. You mentioned Apple, because we're really here to talk about your new book, which is about... Isn't this nice how smooth this is working? So your new book is called The iPhone Photography Book, How to Get Professional Looking Images Using the Camera You Always Have With You. And it's an actual physical book that someone's actually printing, binding, and mailing. It's not.
I'm
just curious. It's sort of a throwback thing. So tell me about the book.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with Share Me Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using Share Me Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at shareme.chat.
So what it is just the iPhone camera has gotten so good. Like, it started to scare me is what pushed me into this. So my wife is an iPhone photographer, and she's just a really good photographer, and the iPhone is her camera. And she's taking pictures that I'm looking at these and going, there's no way you would know that these weren't from a DSLR or a mirrorless camera. And so I started taking it a little bit more seriously. And then the last couple of iPhones, Apple is leading the way with the stuff that they're doing. They're doing this computational software stuff that, while the camera is good, like the lens has gotten better and there's things, what they're doing with the software is ridiculous. And it's allowing you to do things I didn't think you'd be able to do with a camera on your phone. And so I realized, what if we took the same things that I teach professional photographers, like the same things about portraits and about posing and about landscape. And the only thing we change is, now you're using a phone. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. The whole book is built as the same things that I teach the pros, except for, and the same techniques that we use, except for, instead of you holding a DSLR or a mirrorless, you're holding an iPhone. Mm-hmm. And so now I will say about 25% of the book or 30% of it is very iPhone specific things. Like, here's some neat things you can do in the iPhone. Here's some stuff the software will do. Here's how to take advantage of it. Right. But the other 75% is just teaching you the skills of photography And, mm-hmm. and it's just because at some point the camera doesn't matter that much. There are other things that matter more. So right. now that you've got a great camera, because I do think the camera is at a kind of a breakout stage right now right. with the iPhone. I think it's this computational photography stuff that Apple introduced, I think was a game changer. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think I thought it was time for this book. And what's weird is, you know, like you're like, do people still write books? This book has my highest pre-orders for the print version of probably any book I've had in 3 or 4 years.
Wow. So I'm curious, when you say professional, you know, that's one of those words that, you know, can mean different things to different people. So right. clearly you're talking about, you know, something other than portrait mode, right? On right. the camera, even though the portrait mode is fine and we all like it. When you talk about professional, what kind of accessories are you talking about that can go with the, let's say an iPhone 12 Pro, you know, either lights or.
Well, I mean, I do talk a little bit about accessories. I have an accessory chapter in the book and there's some things that'll help. But the things that I talk about a lot in the book are not necessarily things that you buy to attach to your phone.
Okay.
So, for example, if I'm teaching photography, natural light photography, so a lot of people are drawn to natural light photography. It's inexpensive and things like that. And I have a whole chapter on that. But one of the things I tell people, and I'll just share it with you, one of the big tips in the book, and it's a secret that pros have been using forever, is to buy what's called a one-stop diffuser. Mm-hmm. So this is not a piece of camera gear. It is an accessory for photography. Picture a round disc that's flat. So it's a flat round disc about the size of a basketball. It opens right. up into a big, large, you know, 30 or 40 inch rectangle. Yep. You literally hold it between your subject and the sun, mm-hmm. and the light becomes absolutely beautiful. So you're standing out in this harsh, nasty, whatever. And then you put this diffuser over your subject's head. So you need a friend.
Right.
So Gary, you got to get somebody up there with you.
Right.
And you'd both have to be wearing masks at this point to get close right, enough right. to do it yourself. So bring a friend, an assistant, a buddy, whoever. And you just say, look, put the sun's up there and they're squinting and it looks awful. Put this between the sun and them. And Gary, it is shocking. I mean, the difference is just like, are you kidding me? You know how right. much it costs? You can get it for $10. You can find right. these for $10. You're $10 away. But also, you take that same thing and put a flash through it. So right. they make flashes for the iPhone.
Yeah.
They're not that soft until you right. fire one through that one soft diffuser. All of a sudden you're getting results that you would swear that you shot with a DSLR or a mirrorless because mm-hmm. the quality of the light is fantastic. And by right. the way, the iPhone does great in great light. Like that's its secret weapon. Its secret weapon is if it's nice and bright outside, it'll rock it. But when you're shooting outside, people don't look that good. But right. for $10, I'm telling you, it's a different world. And I show side-by-side examples that are stunning. Like you look at that and you're like, I will never photograph a person without a one-stop diffuser in my life. And I give all kinds of other examples. But that's typical of the kind of things that I talk about. How do you use a diffuser? Why do you use one? How to use one with a flash? How to use a flash? You know, right. all that kind of stuff. Yeah, portrait mode is great, but it's just one thing. You know, that's one little thing in your bag of tricks.
But it's the same bag. What's interesting is with the stuff you're talking about, it's the same bag. It's just a different device.
Yeah, it is. It's the same stuff that I've been teaching. And mm-hmm. I have a book called The Natural Light Photography Book that is for DSLR and mirrorless. And there's a whole chapter on the using diffusers, big ones, little ones, because you can get big ones that you can, you know, shoot a wedding party under. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can do. But but that's typical of stuff where we're going away from the standard stuff that you would normally do. With a photographer, with a DSLR, and we're going to apply it to the phone. And
is there anything you can do on the phone? Well, I'm going to reverse it.
Okay.
That you can't do on a DSLR.
Oh, well, you know what it is? You can do the same stuff. It's just so much easier on the phone.
Right.
For example, I was doing a workshop in China at the end of 2019, not in Wuhan, different part of China. And we're shooting these fishermen in the lake and they're casting their nets. And I've got my DSLR and I'm setting up all this stuff and I got this big tripod and I got all this junk. And the other instructor that's with me, his wife walks over and she mm-hmm. holds up her iPhone and she shows me this picture. It's video. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden it goes to slow-mo. super right. slow-mo. And you see these fishermen, it's in slow motion. It was amazing. I'm like, could I do that on my, well, I don't know how. No, I'd have to get on my computer. I'd have to shoot regular video, go to my computer, apply a slow-mo effect. This was brilliant because I don't know if you know the iPhone.
Sure.
It starts the photo yeah. in real time. And then it slows it. So you see this fisherman. Yeah. So you see this fisherman and he's throwing the thing and it freezes him. And then it goes to super slow-mo. It's incredible. Now, right. while I'm sitting out there shooting, right? We're at dawn. We're shooting out here in the middle of nowhere, China. She is posting her shots, which look right. fantastic, by the way, to Instagram.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I'm 4 hours from that.
Yeah.
I got to take a boat back to the shore. I got to jump in a bus. I got to switch buses at some point to a car. I got to drive to my hotel. I got to download my photos. I got to put them on my computer. I got to crop them. I got to edit them. Then I have to save them back to my phone so I can import them to Instagram. And she's standing in the middle of nowhere and doing it. And I'm like, what am I doing here?
Well, you know, what's interesting is you mentioned that because that's something that's come up a few times with previous guests in the podcast is about the inability, it appears, for the traditional camera makers to make their devices more competitive, right? Mm-hmm. I like, for example, I don't understand why there can't be a cellular connection in a DSLR, right? So you could exactly do that.
They can absolutely be. The problem is now you have to pay for a second one. Right. And that's what kind of in your phone, you're already paying for it.
I mean, you can have it's funny, they're Apple's selling that now where you can have a cell connection in your Apple Watch and people are paying for that. You know, I'm just saying I think it's interesting how from the Japanese camera manufacturer's standpoint, they seem to be focused so much on lens quality
yep. and
those type of differentiators that with the computational photography that Apple has been able to put in the iPhone, they've kind of negated that advantage to some extent.
Yes, they absolutely have. And they're doing things with that computational photography. Well, here's the thing. Just look at this. This is a simple thing. You mentioned portrait mode. And for those of you listeners who are not familiar with portrait mode, it blurs the background behind your subject to make it look like you took it with an expensive camera. And it does a brilliant job. But here's the thing that this is where the computational, that is part of the computational photography. But here's the mind blower. After you've taken the photo, you can go into the Apple's own Photos app and change how blurry the background is.
Right.
You can take the blur out. You can put way more blur in. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. They made a camera called the Lytra once that was the idea that you would use later. Exactly. Well, it's in the iPhone today. It's there. Mm-hmm. And you can go say, all right, I want to make this a 1.8 aperture. And you just slide your finger to the left of the background. I'm telling you, it's just that kind of stuff. And that's really what it is. It's the ease and immediacy of what they're doing. So they're doing things sometimes that your camera can't do at all. And then when they're doing things that your DSLR camera can do, they're just doing it easier, faster, quicker. And then you can share it. And you're right. The camera companies are like, hey, let's focus on sharp lenses. And Apple's like, let's make cool stuff easy for everybody. And let's let them do stuff that even pros are having to take a long time. They have to wait till they get back to their laptop. And,
right.
you know, Apple's like, this is our computer. This is it. We're going to edit in here. And to make an image black and white, to add motion, you know, like, for example, it just is a little tip. When you're shooting pictures with your phone, if at any time you decide you want to shoot video, you just click on the shutter button and drag to the right and it starts shooting video.
Right.
While you're shooting stills.
Right.
And by the way, you can do the opposite. When you're shooting video, mm-hmm. if you look on screen, there's a little white button. That's a shutter button. You can take stills while you're taking video. I mean, they're just doing things that just, you ask your DSLR to do that. And they're like, oh no, we either shoot video or we shoot stills. We don't do both. And the iPhones goes, yeah, absolutely, we do both. And I'm telling you, it's terrifying what they're doing with the iPhone. I had to write that book.
I have a question. So one of the advantages, of course, an iPhone has is you can do apps.
Yeah.
Apple's built-in app is great. Are there any other apps you recommend that people try out to play with besides the usual Instagram and?
Oh, no, I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give you a great one. Mm-hmm. It's called lens distortions.
Okay.
And it's so cheap. And I'm telling you, what it allows you to do, because the name is really, it's not a good name. Right. But what it allows you to do is add all kinds of things, effects to your photos, like lens flares, mm-hmm. and suns and the sun peeking in and fog and just all this different stuff that you add to your photos that take them to another level. And all I do every time I look at it is go, why doesn't Photoshop have this?
Okay.
This should be part of Photoshop. I can do it on my phone for like 99 cents and it's great. It's so much better than you think, because my description does not do it justice, because it sounds like, I don't really want to add that, until you see all the things it does. And you just drag and drop them. You take your finger and say, ooh, that looks really cool. You drag it into your photo and then you move it on the screen the way you want. And then you can decide if you want it brighter or not. And you know, that's like a hot thing with portraits right now, or all this backlit lens flare stuff that you see on Instagram.
Yeah.
You're one tap away. It's so cool. And it works great on landscapes. You can make stuff look like space. It's all kinds of fireworks. It's all this different stuff. It's amazing. So that is my number one pick, lens distortion.
Lens distortion. I think that's one of the things that has been underestimated in terms of how people interact with a camera phone versus a traditional camera, is the camera phone allows you to experiment much more easily with an image.
Oh yeah.
Then even when you get it to your desktop, right? Once you're in a desktop, it's not as free-flowing process, I think, rather than just sliding stuff around on your finger.
Oh yeah, it's so intuitive, you know. It's and it's all built in. You're not having to use a whole bunch of different crazy things. Like I always tell people, if you want to have fun with your photo, take the photo and then swipe up. And all of a sudden, here comes all these new features, and you're like, wait a minute, I can animate this photo. You know, it's like, it does so many things behind the scenes, and you're just one click away. It's stuff that you could do in Photoshop. You just have to be really good at Photoshop, but you don't have to be really good at the Photos app. It's just all right there. And I think that's a great equalizer. I think that gives people an opportunity to do things with their images that were out of reach for most people that weren't like Photoshop experts.
Throwing this back out to your core audience, like the professional photographer, how do they react to this in the marketplace when, you know, Uncle Joe thinks he's a pro with an iPhone?
They are very, very defensive about it. I can tell you they are very, very defensive. So the community is kind of split into two groups. It's a group. There's one group that's like, I can see where this is going. I can see that this is the future, and I'm tired of carrying a heavy camera, so I'm okay with this. And there's the other side that says, I don't want to be wrong. I've spent a lot of time learning this stuff. I spent a lot of time perfecting it, and I don't want Uncle Joe to come along and kind of take my wedding gig.
Right.
But the reality of it is Apple is innovating faster than anybody, faster than Canon, Sony, Nikon combined. They're doing stuff that the camera companies can only dream of, as you pointed out earlier. And so, I mean, you don't have a choice. They're going to keep making the cameras better and better. Hey, do you want to hear an interesting statistic? Do you know how many people at Apple are working on just the camera? Like how many? I read this in an article, just people working on the camera at Apple, over 800 full-time people just working on the camera, because one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, people upgrade their camera from version to version, update their phone, is to get a better camera.
Right.
A better photo experience. I mean, you don't pick up your phone and look at it and go, I wish I could make a call. I wish there were apps. I mean, it does all that stuff. What's the one thing that can continually get better and better and better and make you want to buy a new phone? It's why I bought my phone, because I wanted a better camera.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say it, because if you look at your typical iPhone ad, it's a camera ad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they're promoting, or that's what they're using differentiator is the camera, not phone quality, not you can listen to all your music on it or anything like that.
You can do it on any phone.
It's the camera industry is completely shifted in a completely different direction.
Yeah, and what'll happen is, I mean, you're gonna have And for my prediction for the traditional camera industry is that they're not going away. DSLRs and mirrorlesses aren't going away, but they will be the tools of professionals, like people who make their living, because you don't want to pay some photographer $5,000. He shows up with his phone.
Right.
Right. That's a quick way to get fired. Well,
he's going to have one of those stop and a half shields that you talked about. He's going to have one of those.
Yeah, you're going to bring a lot of equipment, because if you hire somebody to shoot your wedding for $5,000 and they show up with a phone, you're going to be pretty upset.
Right.
So there will be people that will still make their living and have their advantages. I mean, you know, it's hard to shoot pro sports with an iPhone.
Right.
You know, you're not going to see a bunch of people on the sideline, though. I do see people on the sidelines. I shoot, you know, NFL and different pro sports. And I look over and there's someone shooting video or doing time lapse or doing something with their phone.
Yeah.
So there are people that you will run on into, maybe two or three people per game out of the 70 or 80 photographers that are on a sideline of a game. But it's not a sports camera. Right. You know, it's like it's not a wildlife camera at this point. But I'm telling you what, when Apple does, and you know they're going to,
right,
find a way to incorporate a zoom lens. And what we've seen some other manufacturers doing is taking the lens, mm-hmm. ready for this, they turn it sideways, because nobody wants the lens to extend out of the body.
Right. So
they turn it sideways inside the body, and they use a mirror.
Yeah.
Using a mirror like a DSLR to right. get you telephoto lenses. So that's what's next. I think when Apple finally introduces, because that's the one thing, they've got the wide angle now.
Right.
Their super wide angle is 13 millimeters. It's awesome.
Right.
Their super wide angle camera is incredible. And that was missing. What you always had was basically you had a standard wide angle and that was it. And then a zoom that isn't really a zoom.
Right.
When they added that wide angle, that was a changer for me. That's when I realized, okay, it's on.
Yeah.
So when they add the telephoto, what's going to happen to the traditional camera photo manufacturers?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be hard. I mean, again, like you said, there'll always be a segment of the industry that will need, you know, the mirrorless format because of specialized lenses, or they're shooting a lot of underwater or something like that. You know, certainly there will be
architectural stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's going to be more and more people who are going to have their needs fulfilled. Like you said, Uncle Joe, who maybe had a DSLR that he used because he was a hobbyist. Well, you can be a full-fledged hobbyist without that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you already have this one camera.
Mm-hmm.
You're already carrying it with you. Are you going to carry another? How many cameras do you need to carry on vacation?
Well, I recommend carrying as many as possible, but that's
Now you're talking my language.
But I'm old school, so that's part of mine. So listen, Scott, tell people when the book is going to be out and where they can get it.
So Amazon is showing a date of March 9th as the print version is in stock. You can get the Kindle version right now. Mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble will have it around the same time and wherever fine books are sold. So any one of those places, I would say by March 10th, we'll be in most stores.
Awesome. And where can people find out more about you and what you do?
I write a daily blog that's about, you know, photography and Photoshop and stuff at scottkelby.com. And I'm on Instagram as Scott Kelby, and I'm on Twitter as Scott Kelby, and I'm on Facebook as S Kelby.
So you're everywhere.
For some reason, yeah.
Do you have a TikTok is my question. Do you have a TikTok yet?
I do not. I do not have a TikTok. My daughter does. My son does. Does that count? They've got TikTok.
It does not count. I want to see you doing some dancing on the TikTok one of these days.
Yes. See, that's the main thing that's kept me off is knowing I would have to dance.
Well, thank you, Scott, for your time. Congratulations on the book and best wishes for a great 2021.
Thanks so much, Gary.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.